support comes from the Arizona Inn, a four-diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tucson Weekly Executive Editor Jim Ninsel, your host for Zona Politics. And today we are talking with Miguel Ortega, who is one of the four Democrats seeking a seat on the Tucson City Council in Ward 1. It's an open seat with the current Councilwoman Regina Romero stepping down to run for mayor in our city. Miguel is also up against Lane Santa Cruz, Sammy Hamed, and Rob Elias in what's being a real crowded primary. We don't see those very often here in the city of Tucson. Miguel, welcome to Zona Politics.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much for having me. And again, like I was mentioning to you off the air a little bit, my apologies if you can hear Ceci Baldenegro's little dog barking in the background. He's doing his job in protecting the house.
Yeah, yet another watchdog in your household.
Right.
Hey, listen, a lot of people know who you are, but many do not. So tell us who Miguel Ortega is and why he's running for Tucson City Council.
Sure, Jim. Thank you. Thank you again for having me. It's a real pleasure. Love KXCI. I've been very involved with KXCI in past years, as you know. The biggest thing, what I'm proudest of is my deep roots in the Sonoran Desert. You know, we go way back, Jim, in this area. My father and grandfather, they all, you know, have very deep roots, especially along the Rio Sonora in Mexico. My grandfather was a miner and a vaquero cowboy, and my father was also a vaquero. And he came over as a bracero, it's like the guest worker program. And he worked the fields of Arizona and California. And then I love this, you know, to mention how he, you know, proposed to my mom, who was in Hermosillo, Sonora. It was very traditional. He wrote a letter to his parents, and he proposed, and she said yes. And so she came over. And so, you know, I growing up, I went to public school. I got a great education. And then I always like to say, you know, that we moved back to Sonora from California because that's where our roots are. And I, you know, I went to school at, I went to Pima College and then over to the U of A and, you know, worked my way through college. Basically, you know, working in cafes and restaurants and warehouses and, you know, with Pell Grants, you know, that's how I paid for school. So I graduated, I got my bachelor's degree in 1991. And then I was a substitute teacher for about 6 years. I was in schools in the South Side and the West Side, Tucson High and Sunnyside, Desert View, and, you know, really learned a lot about some of the working family issues and meeting the young people from those schools. It was a great experience. It got me really thinking about the importance of education, the importance of having a strong workforce and all the challenges behind that. So then after that, I did a lot of social service work. I was working over at Sueños del Barrio, which is a prevention program in South Tucson for many years. Did a little bit of radio as well during that time, Hot 98. And by the way, we're recognizing Melissa Santa Cruz on Saturday as the Melissa Santa Cruz Day for the city of Tucson and South Tucson. So she invited me to say a few words for her. So just a side note there. But so I then continued on to do some community organizing. One of the proudest moments for me was my work with women in Brownsville, Texas, who were fighting for reproductive rights. And so I, you know, worked with them to find ways to message with the media, especially mainstream media. And so I learned a lot from them as well. It was very fulfilling. So I did a lot of community organizing like that. Then I had 8 years over at Access Tucson. So that community media center taught me a lot about the importance of free speech and local democracy. And, you know, we fought the good fight to keep that place open, but unfortunately it closed down, but, you know, you never say never. And I worked for Councilmember Karen Ulick for 5 years as her chief of staff. And so that's when I really kind of started to learn about how the local bureaucracy, the city bureaucracy works and what it takes to push forward progressive policies and how to navigate the bureaucracy at the city. And so now, you know, I continue to consult locally owned businesses. When I was with Karen at the Ward 3 office, we're very proud, and this is something maybe you can research as a professional journalism, Jim, because I think that we were the ones that Tucson was the very first city to actually create a buy local day. What we did is we basically recognized that the localism movement headed by Timber Lanning over in Phoenix was really catching on and super important, because we really felt that we needed to educate the community on the importance of buying local, recognizing that every dollar spent with a locally owned business, a large portion stays in the community, whereas compared to chains, that money leaks out. And so I was very proud of being a part of pushing that. I took the lead as a chief of staff at the Ward 3 office for that localism campaign. And so I believe that Tucson is the very first to have a local buy local day. And we purposely made sure that it would take place on Black Friday, because that's when everybody thinks about spending money and buying gifts. And so they have a choice whether to go with a locally owned business or a chain. So, you know, and now what I do, Jim, I do a little bit of consulting when I can with locally owned businesses. And I also work at a warehouse on the weekends, because, you know, my wife and I made a choice to raise our kids ourselves. And so that means we have to be very creative with our schedule. She's an events planner. So I do 3 12-hour shifts on the weekends. And then I have 4 days off so that I can, be with the boys. And then my wife does the events planning. And so, you know, we're paycheck to paycheck. That's how we grew up. That's my experience with my family, and it's still the experience now. And, I'm ready to take on a new position of advocacy at the mayor and council. I think people really are looking for a bold new vision with courage to push forward policies. I don't think that Tucsonans, just like the rest of citizens of the United States, they do not want overly cautious elected officials. They want courageous public servants that will push forward progressive issues. And that's what I'm ready to do, Jim.
Well, let's talk about one of the more controversial issues, I think, that's going on in the West Side in particular, but probably all over town, and that's gentrification. And there's certainly concerns that we've seen a lot of investment in the downtown area, but there are concerns that folks are getting priced out of their homes around the West Side, the areas all around downtown, really, south, west, east, north. And there's been a forum on that recently. Talk a little about your thoughts about gentrification and the role of a city council member and the city council in kind of managing that phenomenon.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I want to, really recognize and congratulate the folks that organized the Ezlio Forum. It was jam-packed. I don't know if you heard about that. It was about 400 people there. So that's a testament to how seriously people are taking the issue of gentrification. I know at some point during the campaign, there's other candidates that were talking about replacing the word gentrification with displacement. And I just don't think that's a rough enough word. It's gentrification, and it is a serious thing. And gentrification, Jim, is not just about brick and mortar. It's not just about houses. It's about people and about poverty and about the lack of livable wages and the lack of security. And this includes renters as well. It's not just homeowners. Renters are being pushed out of their homes. Small businesses, locally owned businesses, are being pushed out of their homes. I mean, we just recently heard of even more efforts to make it harder for locally owned businesses with the proposal to make the park meter parks go on till 12 midnight.
The parking meters in the downtown area.
Yeah, and so one of the disconnects here, Jim, is that a lot of folks just don't they lack trust. And what happens is when the city tries to push forward these kind of proposals, citizens are smart. locally owned businesses are smart. They recognize that we are growing and we have to make a choice. The one thing, though, that I think that they don't appreciate is that, you know, a lot of times these conversations and ideas happen without them at the table. And so then they're surprised. And oftentimes, now what I remember at the city, staff would, you know, and there's a lot of great bureaucrats, a lot of great staff members who really do want to do the great things for our citizens. But, you know, some other staff members, unfortunately, don't have the best interests or just are disconnected from citizens and locally owned businesses. So push things through, you know, without citizen participation. So this is one example. And my understanding from a lot of locally owned business owners is that they never even heard of this. And so there may have been a letter that was sent out, but certainly there was not a great enough effort to let business owners know about this proposal. And so, you know, why are we making it harder for locally owned businesses to do businesses? You know, we depend on locally owned businesses. 60-70% of the general fund from sales tax comes from locally owned businesses, not the big, large companies that come in. So what we should do is provide the red carpet treatment to locally owned businesses, just as we do with companies, so that they are flourishing. So I think there's a real need for accountability, transparency, and you know, the people on the west side are really want to hear a sense of urgency from mayor and council in dealing with gentrification. This is not just a not in my backyard issue. This is about people and families and small businesses that really actually brand and identify. This is what Tucson is all about, and that's how we're going to succeed economically. That's how we're going to succeed culturally with the quality of life, that kind of thing.
Let me ask you, what do you think, what are some actions that the city council can do in order to help folks who are seeing property values rise and potentially be pushed out of homes because they are renters or what have you?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we shouldn't do is to create a task force and just leave it at that, because that's a disconnect. The mayor and council created a task force to deal with the issue, and that kind of makes people feel uneasy because there's already leaders in the community that are a natural task force. And so it kind of doesn't really match with the sense of urgency that people are feeling. Now, we certainly can provide opportunities to give more, to have a more robust education campaign so that folks know how to take advantage of historic preservation status and the differences between the federal and local, you know, the status, and how we can work with families to look at eliminating or reducing property tax rates. There's some great programs there. But let's start talking about to rent control in a serious manner. Let's start talking about other ways that other cities deal with gentrification, how to, you know, create more affordable housing, to have a, you know, better stock, better inventory of the possible, you know, areas to develop with affordable housing, and have that information earlier in the process so that residents can engage and talk in partnership with the city, as opposed to being surprised and you know, suddenly, you know, be caught off guard, like with the Rio Neighborhood Center or the Rio Neighborhood Golf Course, and how the city tried to really basically attempt to land grab. I mean, you know, Jim, that area at El Rio, the city was trying to sell it in a way that it was valued with nothing on it, as if it was a vacant, you know, dust bowl. And we found out later that just the trees alone were worth almost $7 million. So that's not really protecting the interests of the residents. And what we need as the mayor and council is to be much bolder and go beyond, you know, task forces, go beyond just kind of lip service gentrification, try to call it displacement and not really get the sense of urgency of residents. We need a lot more. So yeah, let's look at, you know, great programs that are already in place. Let's educate folks. Let's look at other ways. But the main thing is let's have more accountability and transparency and push for advocacy from the city, as opposed to kind of just, you know, cautious steps to mitigate.
And if you're just tuning in, we are talking with Miguel Ortega here on Zona Politics with Jim Nintzel. I'm your host, Jim Nintzel, and Miguel is one of four Democrats seeking the West Side Ward 1 seat, which is being vacated by Regina Romero as she seeks the mayor's office. And let me ask you, Miguel, the families, Tucson Families Free and Together Initiative, it's folks are collecting signatures for this. It would essentially create, I think, a sanctuary city in Tucson and limit what law enforcement can investigate in terms of determining whether someone's in this country illegally if they get involved with an encounter with law enforcement. And I'm wondering your thoughts on this particular initiative.
Oh, well, sure. You know, I was the very first and only for a long time candidate, not just in Ward 1, but of all candidates in Tucson, to actually endorse, sign the petition, and fully support this initiative. I think it's a very important initiative. I think that we need it. And it's unfortunate that it took so long, you know, for a handful of people to join. And I think actually I applaud one of my opponents who finally did come out in support of this initiative. But, you know, I think it needs to be said that what progressive Democrats and actually all Tucsonans, I think, are looking for is bolder and more courageous leadership, more decisive leadership. When I read this in January, I immediately knew that it was a good idea. Now, let's get some perspective here, Jim, as far as how this initiative is supported. Now, the e-board of the Democrats, and as you know, the county Democrats, they represent the region. It's not just Tucson, but it's greater Tucson. So they tend to be a little bit more conservative. They voted almost 75% in favor of supporting this initiative. The Young Democrats voted almost unanimously to support this initiative. And the LD3 group of Democrats that represent the vast majority of Ward 1 voted unanimously to support this initiative because they know it's an important initiative because we need to protect families. Now, not just the immigrant families. That's absolutely a moral question. We absolutely need to do what we can to stop or mitigate families from separating. But also, it protects us as Tucsonans who are fortunate enough to be citizens or to be documented. For example, you know, Jim, if you are with your loved one and you're undergoing a domestic violence situation, the last thing you want to happen if you're a victim of domestic violence is for your neighbors who happen to be undocumented to think twice in calling the police to report an incident that you are experiencing. The last thing we want them to do is to think twice in calling the police. And so right now, unfortunately, it's so vague that's the possibility. Now, what this initiative does, it ensures that people that are undocumented will recognize that their relationship with police is about safety. It's about having good neighbors. It's about doing a neighborly thing. And so it really is a no-brainer. And the people that try to dissect it and try to dismiss it question it, I haven't really done their research, because in other communities they have faced the same criticism, there was the same kind of threats, and they were able to get by those and do well. So I really hope that the other opponents, I really hope that they will join me in supporting this initiative.
Let's talk a little bit about transit. The city funds the transit, the bus system, and the associated programs that go along with that, the light rail and the Vantran and programs along those lines. And there's a pretty significant amount of the general fund that goes to this. They obviously get funding from the fare box. I think the goal is to get 25% recovery from the fare box, and they're pretty close to that. But they also get money from the federal government. There's multiple funding sources. But there have been complaints in the past that the city spends too much of the general fund on the transit system. there's been complaints that it doesn't spend enough. And there's also folks who think, you know, we're just about right. Kind of the Goldilocks status. So your thoughts on what we're doing with the general fund for the bus system, and also on the question of fares, and are the fares about right where they are now? Should they be higher? Should they be lower?
Well, you know, I don't think that transit should be used as a political football, and I don't think that citizens should ever apologize for this, for city leadership protecting people's right and need to transport. A lot of working families depend on the on public transportation, and mayor and council needs to do everything they possibly can to continue to keep it affordable. And so there's always this talk about the general fund, and for some reason we always get pushed to that narrative of like fighting over crumbs. Where we should be talking about is how to expand the general fund. How can we increase that pie? And so the way to do that is to support more locally owned businesses so that they can be more successful, and we can increase that revenue, you know. But as far as transit, well, the other thing that kind of concerns me, and I think that we need someone that's not afraid to offend donors, that's not afraid to offend the political status quo, and that is that, you know, the city of Tucson, unfortunately, when it comes to the RTA and PAG, you know, we have one vote on a lot of the transit future of Tucson. As you know, South Tucson has an equal vote to Tucson and Sahuarita and Oro Valley. And as much as I love those communities, you know, it's unfortunate. A lot of people wonder, like, how is it that we always get stuck with some ideas that are either are bad ideas or change, don't change with needs of transit needs of people. And I think part of that is because there are some people that are pushing for a more regional form of governance that kind of disenfranchises Tucsonans. So we have to fight for transit. We have to fight for affordable public transportation, and keep the cost as low as possible. With the modern streetcar, okay, that's, you know, we're making some progress there, but we can't make it so that people feel as if one particular part of transit is exclusively for just the well-connected, and the rest of the working families don't have access to it.
And let's talk a little bit about some of the transportation issues. And I know the Broadway widening is outside of Ward 1. It's basically Ward 6 and Ward 5. But it's been a controversial question about whether we should widen Broadway between downtown and Country Club, that they are moving forward with that later this year, and the idea is to have a six-lane road there. Do you think that was the right decision for the council to make? And also, in terms of how they are approaching it, now that the decision has been made, do you think the city transportation department is being appropriately sensitive to the needs of that corridor?
Well, you know, it's hard to keep up, you know, with so many of these plans that unfortunately are pushed forward with a lack of participation from the residents. I know there was a lot of people along that area, you know, the Sunshine Mile area, that weren't happy with the process. And a lot of it was because there was a lack of open and responsive and transparent, you know, transparency in the process. And so, you know, I think that, you know, we need to talk more. When we attack these kind of plans, we got to talk about walkability. We got to talk about how we are changing for a greener community. What are we doing to accommodate more electric buses and that mode of transportation? What are we doing to create corridors that recognize that, you know, climate change is real, and how is these corridors of transportation going to accommodate for that, you know? So this particular process, you know, I've heard of a lot of grumblings, and quite frankly, Jim, that's kind of a common thing, you know. So what we need to do is have way more open, responsive, and transparent local government, so that people can be a lot more involved from the very beginning and be taken seriously. And that's why we're running on stronger neighborhoods. We're running on, you know, like I said, open, responsive, and transparent local government, healthy green communities, and supporting small businesses, strong working families, you know, and fair and equitable parks, roads, and city services. And I want my child, when I go across town, to recognize, to not ask me, why that park on the east side looks so much nicer than the park on Joaquin Murieta Park. And so when plans like this come up, we need to make sure that they're successful, but they're community-driven, they're resident-driven. And if I can, Jim, I want to also mention the I-11 proposal. I was the first to come out in opposition to I-11, the bypass plan that would go around Ultra Valley area and devastate the Sonoran Desert there, and then also devastate the small, locally owned small businesses, because they would take the commerce that we've been fighting for from Mexico for so many years. Now, finally, we've made some progress in getting more commerce coming from Tucson so they could spend in our locally owned businesses and increase our sales tax. And now suddenly there's this plan to divert traffic over to an I-11 on the west side of Tucson Mountains. And it's just a horrible idea. Now, I think that Tucsonans are looking for a council member that is courageous and will state it and fight for them. And when they see a bad idea, to say it, not to kind of hedge their bets, not to kind of be overly cautious. They want bold action. They want someone to fight for them, to actually advocate. And so I'm very proud of the fact that I spoke out against that. And I know that mayor and council just recently voted unanimously to oppose it. I came out against it several months before that, but I'm glad that we are on the same page. And now my opponents are seeing the importance of this, and now they're starting to state their opposition as well. And I welcome that, and I commend them for that as well. But I tell you, Jim, you know, openness, responsive, transparent local government is absolutely what's on people's minds, because that's the foundation to everything. That's how we get everything done. We don't want to go back to the dark days of Rio Nuevo. There's still a lot of concerns about Rio Nuevo, but people just do not want that. And so that's what I want. I want to make sure that we do everything we can to bring that voice that people are hungry for. They absolutely want bold leadership and courageous leadership.
And we are actually already out of time, Miguel. Our half hour has flown by. If you are, I've been tuning in here. I've been speaking with Miguel Ortega, one of four Democrats seeking the Ward 1 seat on the west side of Tucson in the August primary. It's a crowded race, so I'm sure there's a lot of folks knocking on doors in that ward. Let me ask you real quick, in case folks are interested in learning more about you, let them know your website.
Yeah, you can find out more on how to volunteer and how to support my campaign by going to OrtegaForCouncil.com. And if I could just squeeze in real quick,
sure.
Jim, that I also think that we need to come back to full weekly mayor and council meetings, and that we need to have call to the audience return, and we should have call to the audience for study sessions as well. There was an unfortunate incident with a constituent that was trying to express her concerns, that call to the audience. I think that was very unfortunate. We all make mistakes, but I think that kind of highlights the need for more openness. And, you know, over the years, that local democracy has been diminishing. Mayor and council work has just not been, not been out in the open and sunshine. So the first thing I would do, one of the first things I would do once elected, is bring back more mayor and council meetings, more call to the audience opportunities, instead of this once a month meetings that they average on.
All right. Well, Miguel, thank you so much for joining us here on Zona Politics, and good luck with your campaign. And thanks to the audience for tuning in, and we'll see you all next week.
Zona Politics is made possible with the generous support of the Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org. Support for Zona Politics is provided by Hotel Congress in historic downtown Tucson. Hotel Congress is known for its world-famous taproom, Cup Cafe, and Club Congress, offering local and national acts inside and outside on the plaza. More information at hotelcongress.com and 622-8848.